Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Joss Brown, it's not the wind-up on a Monday. It's actually a Friday night, my friend. It's 20 past five. On a Friday, we've both got very busy days and many days ahead of us, so we're pre-recording a wind-up, but we hope that next week goes well. Hope there's lots of different things to get excited about. Hopefully, GTA's been patched and stuff. You never know. They might do bits and pieces with it. But you can go over to the YouTube channel. You can find a whole bunch of me and Josh talking about Grand Theft Auto, the Definitive Edition trilogy, all the different things that are kind of up in flames with that series of games so far. But that's not to say that they're not completely unsalvageable. And to be honest, we've both been having a nice old time with them. So we kind of just thought we'd talk about them as video games, actually talk about the positives, talk about what it feels like to revisit Grand Theft Auto 20 years later. Because you, unlike me, aren't an absolute madhead and haven't been living on the original GTA trilogy in 2021 anyway. So what's your thoughts? You went back to Grand Theft Auto 3 for the first time in how long?
God, a long time. 10, 15 years, maybe. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, I have no nostalgia for, weirdly enough. That was one that just completely missed me as a kid. Well, it's because, right, you go back to those releases. Also, hello, everyone. This is really nice. This is kind of like the wind down for us. But also, it's not coming out next week.
I didn't even do the proper intro. I just sort of did like whatever I said. Like I said, it's late. It's past 5 o'clock. But I said something. And then I should have said, I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
The energy is high. Hello, Scott Tilford. How are you doing? Yeah. Yes, Grand Theft Auto 3 is a game I've not played for a long time. But going back to it has been, you know, incredibly fascinating to play it as a game for once. I've not played that in so long. And I've never really played it as a proper game, which might sound weird. But when I was younger, and I was talking to my partner about this last night, because she similarly played it like me, played a lot of these games, but didn't really do the story missions. Like when I was little, I was more into spending tens, if not hundreds of hours just causing anarchy in the streets, putting on the cheats and having fun, to the point where the mission design was not something I kind of was cognizant about or really cared all that much about. So it's fascinating going back to it now, playing the missions as they were, as the game was intended to be played, and having a different experience to what I had when I was younger.
Because I feel like everybody had that friend who, like, you give them GTA and you went like, this is brilliant. This is the next generation of everything. And then it was my best friend, Mr. Simon Wilkinson, who I give it to him and I was like, this is the best thing ever. And he just did wanted missions for 20, 30, 40 hours, never got past. Even the first opening level, I had to go over to his house and we like used to do different cheats to get over to the different islands, try and see more of the game, because he was just got on endless crime sprees over and over again. But I feel like that's absolutely a type of old school GTA fan.
I have no idea why this is the case. I don't know if it's because maybe my memory card was corrupted. Maybe I played it at someone else's house. But every time I played GTA 3, I cared so little about the missions that I wouldn't even save the game. So every time I booted the game up, I had to do those first missions where you kind of bust out with your jail car. And I had to do like the two missions.
Why did you not save it?
Because that's how little I cared about it. And I just jump in.
This
and
is madness.
I have to sit through those cutscenes every time. So I've seen that opening mission of GTA 3 a million times. It was hilarious watching it play out again, knowing every line and only knowing them as like a means to the end, something to get through so I could go wild in a fire engine for a little bit.
So over the years, like, that was you when you first played it. Did you go back? Have you ever seen more than the first island of GTA 3?
I've seen more than the first island. I went back to, you know, obviously I would do the missions to open the islands up. I don't think I finished GTA 3, and Vice City was the game that I played properly, it's quote unquote. You know, that's the one I did the story missions for. So
you matured a lot in that first,
mature a lot in that one, yeah. Maybe I finally figured out how to save the game. Maybe that was it. And I cared more about the missions in that game, and obviously, you know, opened it up way more. But yeah, three is one that I've only messed about in, essentially. Vice City, I played to death, played the story in San Andreas, have no nostalgia for whatsoever.
That, I mean, like I said, that breaks and wounds me. San Andreas was absolutely released in the middle of me and my friend Steve's big rap phase, which we were loving that stuff. It was like the gamified version of everything that we were loving about all that music. But to talk about GTA 3, like, we talked about that difference between sort of like latter-day Rockstar and the early Rockstar, and the fact that back in the day, they were just, you can tell when you play those old missions that it's just really basic AI scripts just let loose. It's just sort of like six vans are going to come after you, and they've been told to target wherever you are, so like go figure out how to destroy them, figure out how to get away from them. Or like, you know, there's a target on the run and they're just programmed to do loops around the city, so figure out how you want to take them out. And I love that approach. I think that whole sandbox style approach to old school GTA is what they very much got away from, and I know that we've done podcasts on that anyway, but as someone who prefers the cinematic stuff, how have you found, I guess, the actual mission design, and like, have you had any fun with that stuff?
I definitely have had a lot of fun, because like you say, you know, it's so different and it's so funny going back to it after so long. Like, I'm fascinated to what people who've never played GTA 3 think of GTA 3 going in it for the first time, because like you said, the mission designs and the length of the missions and their structure are just so antiquated, not necessarily in a bad way, but certainly in a jarring way if you're used to modern GTA games or any modern games at all. Like, I was laughing to myself last night about how so many missions in early GTA 3 are like, pick up your mate Dave and go and buy some cigs from the shop around the corner. You know what I mean? And that's all you do. And it pops up and it's like, you've just got 10 grand for doing that. And I'm like,
well, the thing is, like,
easiest job in the world. Is this what being a criminal was like? Ah, do it, Scott. It's piss easy.
Do you remember though? Because back in the day, like, I mean, we're going all the way back to like 2001 for GTA 3. And it was like, you know, yeah, there were like some open world spaces in games, like Ocarina of Time's big field or something, but it was nothing like what this did, where like you're going to a specific part of the map and accepting a mission and doing a thing. And even the whole hybrid thing, even the idea of walking on two legs and then getting in a car and that being a thing you could do simultaneously, that was incredible. Only Driver 2 did that and did it way worse, plus all the shooting mechanics and stuff. So I think, like I said to you before they came out, I was like, I'm looking forward to like just seeing what the general reception is for people who don't realize how primitive that was and how mind-blowing that was at the time, because that is part of the charm for me. But like that early set of missions, like you said, it is literally, I mean, there's a mission at the beginning of 3 where it's just go take this lady on a night out, take her to a club, she dances a bit, and then you avoid the police and go back home again. That's all it is. And so like it is, and also go and get a car, go get it resprayed. Like, it's all those really easy and more early like furtive missions that would become crazy cinematic stuff over time. So I get a lot of charm out of going back to those things. But to sort of pivot into one of the things that they've got that they, you know, they're sort of selling the game on is like the new aiming controls. What do you think of the actual base gameplay, like the actual like shooting a man in the face-ness of it?
Well, this is kind of why those primitive game design quirks and why those primitive mission types still work, because for me at least, the game is still fun to play and fun to control when you're driving and you're moving and you're exploring the world and you're picking people up and you're dropping people off. Like, it feels responsive, it feels good, it feels a little bit cartoony, and that does kind of stop a little bit when you have to do gunfights, especially in GTA 3, and I know it improves as the series goes on, but in GTA 3 it's unfun, especially early, to get into any kind of gunfight, especially with the new controls that they've had. I briefly touched upon this in the news video we did today, but the lock-on controls that you have for the weapons absolutely suck. Like,
they're so spongy and weird.
So spongy, you can never lock onto the person you want to do. You end up getting shot by someone else. You end up having to restart the whole thing, because obviously, you know, there are no checkpoints in this game. You have to restart the mission entirely if you get busted or if you die or whatever.
But that's so even that is hilarious though, because they didn't even, that is a new checkpoint. It's like, it used to be that you would go to the hospital or you go to the police station, you got to drive back to start the mission again. That's what they've added, but it's not very much at all.
Weird autosave, but it's kind of like, it saves you a bit of time, of course, but ultimately it's still very frustrating if you get killed when it's not your fault and because the controls are just freaking out. My biggest piece of advice to anyone playing GTA 3 is to turn that lock on off. Just do free aim, and you know, the shit is still not good, but it's, for me, it's much better.
You made
no one else saw that face you made, but I
no, did. I did a little ooh face because it's literally because it's the quote unquote new version of aiming that they've put in. Cause you can put it back to classic if you want, which I quite like my muscle, because you can also change the controls back to the regular one if you want, and just play it like old school GTA, but with the new graphics, which is kind of cool. Cause I just sheer muscle memory has me aiming with R1 and shooting with circle, which I know is madness in 2021, but it's still, that's what feels right. But the thing is, like, going between the Definitive Edition and the regular GTA 3, or the one that was re-released in 2015, that aiming model in the original, I still think is way snappier than the new one that they've put in. Like, in terms of, I'm going to hold a button and I'm going to, like, to aim, and I'm going to hold another button to fire, that just, you get there in terms of killing people so much faster than you do in the new one, unless you futz with the sensitivity. But even then, it's a roll of the dice whether or not the game actually decides that the person shooting at you is who you're supposed to aim at.
It's true. I mean, obviously, I think if people are coming to these games who already love the originals and are much more familiar with the original control schemes, like, yeah, change them back and enjoy them that way. Mm-hmm. For me, they were actually one of the biggest reasons I never revisited the older games as a grown-up. I tried to get back into Vice City a few years ago. I bought it on PlayStation 4 and I bought the PlayStation 2 copy again when I bought PlayStation 2. Uh-huh. I've tried to get that into a few times and I've never finished it because in the later missions, I just found the controls to be unwieldy and unresponsive and unfun when you get into those bigger shootouts. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping the new aiming system fixes that the further I get into the game. But for me, I would maybe disagree, just because even though they're not bad necessarily, personal taste, they're a little bit antiquated, they're a little bit frustrating.
I'm still on the quote unquote new aiming, where it's like aim assist or whatever it's called, because there's aim assist, free aim, and classic or something. So I'm on it is new, but it's like trying to ape GTA 4 onwards. So I'm on that, struggling on with it. I've not died in GTA myself in a mission in what, 17 years? And then in this one, it was like the first time I had to take out one of the Diablos guys, and it was like, take out these two guys that are riding in this car. So I was like, cool, I'll ram them off the road and then I'll walk up and I'll shoot them in the face. And then the aiming thing went, no you won't, there's an NPC over there shooting the pedestrian on the path and stuff. And the Diablos guy just got out of the car and shot me instead. And I was like, that's the first time I've actually been wasted in a GTA game, like from an NPC in a long time. But my point is that I'm sticking to the new stuff because I'm forcing myself to be like, no, this is the new way to play, this is what they've worked on, I have to use this. Free aim is also new, like you said, but in my head, like, the new aim assist thing is them shooting for GTA 4 and 5, so I'm like, I should respect that and use the new one, even though it's terrible.
It's interesting that you say that, because for me, as much as I do like the new stuff that remasters and remakes bring to the table, there are just certain things that I know I don't like or I know I prefer. For instance, when I play the Resident Evil 1 remake, which in my opinion is not just one of the best remakes of all time, it's one of the best games of all time. Mm-hmm, I have never in my five times of playing that game used the updated controls. I always go back to the very classic.
Well, the rotating tank controls.
Yes. So I don't know how that game plays with the analog.
Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that, mate?
Because it's bad. Because it's,
no, it's not
intended to be played. It's so good.
That's okay. That's a level of dedication to an original control scheme that I can very much respect as someone who is promoting the original GTA targeting. Yeah. But that's also a little bit mad. That's a little bit head mad.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I've got the sickness for Resident Evil that you do have for GTA.
Because I love that you couldn't just push like left or right on the analog stick. You've got to go, no, I need to rotate that way and then run forward. Like, just, no, I don't. I can't go immediately left. That's crazy. That'll break everything.
It's because if you have the analog stick controls in Resident Evil, you can just like run circles around the zombies. I don't want it to be that easy, my friend.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Well, you know, me and you are from a very specific strand of human being that will say that the tank controls very much contribute to the survival horror feeling of it. And yes. I am 1,000,000% behind that defense. If I ever did a video defending tank controls, it would be that they are a fundamental part of why those games are so scary. I don't know what the hell we were talking about other than weird aiming controls. And I don't know if you had anything else to say about the free aim stuff, because I'm going to try that tonight. I'm going to try different approaches to it across all three games, because it is weird. Oh, go on.
No, you go on.
Well, I was going to say, it is weird that you have to set all three things across all three separate games. Like, I guess it makes sense, but like you can't have a universal control scheme or a universal feel to those games, even though they have tried to match them all up. But they haven't retroactively added things like a crouch to GTA 3. They haven't added like the dodge roll from San Andreas into Vice City. There is still an uptick through those three games, which isn't in the likes of the Crash Bandicoot trilogy or Mass Effect or whatever. Like, there's not a homogeneity to the way they've approached it, which is a whole separate conversation, because I think that's a bit of a disappointment, but it's a bit weird. Like, it's almost like they're trying to replicate the feeling of going from one game to the next few sequels. But at the same time, like, as I'm dabbling in all three, I've mostly stuck with San Andreas the most, because that and Vice City are my top two. It is that thing where I double back in GTA 3 at 2 in the morning to do a little bit before today's shift, and I was like, oh, I'll do a bit of GTA 3, and there's so much not there that's in San Andreas, like in terms of crouching and hiding and whatever, headshots and everything else. Yeah,
you've actually perfectly already segued into what I was going to ask, because before we started recording, you know, we were talking about this. I've only played GTA 3. I'm going through them in order. I'm not doing the big dip like I know you love to do.
I do.
How does the aiming and the controls and the fluidity of combat get better as the series progresses? Because you mentioned stuff like, you know, the crouch in San Andreas, making some kind of makeshift cover system.
Yep.
Like, GTA 3 is very rudimentary. It's very straightforward. It's very primitive in the way combat works.
Shoot.
But from what you were saying to me before recording, it sounds like there's much more to it, at least from a tactile and visceral perspective, as you go on.
It's just giving you options. Like, I mean, it's not night and day. Like, it is those things where, because any sort of third person shooter these days, you know, you approach a combat scenario, there's a bunch of different goons. And if you're anything like me, then you start scanning the environment. It's okay, well, I can hide behind here. I can go behind this corner. I can crouch behind this thing. GTA 3 doesn't have that unless you force yourself around a corner or force yourself behind a van or something. And then you can class that as a cover system, but it's not really. GTA 3's missions are all based around hold the left trigger and then hit the right trigger and shoot everybody, or R1 in circle. Whereas in Vice City, they started bringing in like more specific places to take cover, and there's loads of them in San Andreas. Like, there's a bit at the start of San Andreas where you're taking a train back from like one of the rival gangs, and there's just random dumpsters everywhere. There's no reason why they would be in the road, but there are, and you can run up to them and crouch behind them. And you could kind of do this in the original one, but thanks to the new lock-on system, in theory, sort of sometimes targeting people as they come in and out of cover, like further down the road, let's say in this mission, you can pop in and out of cover and take people out in a way that is like actually using a cover system, but it feels like you're almost gaming the system doing that, because it's like, well, I'm gonna manually crouch. And also, they've changed the fact that you can't rotate on the spot while you're crouched anymore. If you're aiming, CJ rolls to the left or right, which in the original you used to have to press jump and left or right to like manually do it, whereas now it just automatically does it, which is just, it just feels weird, Josh Brown. It's a weird thing and I had to get used to it. But point being that you have more options. Like, you have a more sort of reliable cover system. You can go duck behind something, and the new aiming system might let you, or it did let, in my case, let me tag a few different guys further down. I was actually having a gunfight for a change, as opposed to most GTAs, it's just hold the left trigger and hold whatever your aiming thing is, shoot, and just hope for the best. Like, that was why, I don't know if you remember Vice City's missions that much, but the death row mission where you've got to save Lance,
it's
like down in history is one of the hardest missions of all time, but it's because it's awkward as hell. Like, it's just 20 dudes and you with a rifle hoping the lock-on gets you through.
You could say that about like five Vice City missions and it would be applicable. Like that game is
awesome.
Part of the reason why I put it down as well, because it's just so finicky and frustrating, especially doing some of like the side stuff. Infuriating. And not to completely move on to something completely different.
No, do it.
If you had anything else to add to that. But I was thinking about what you said earlier about, you know, we did a podcast a few weeks ago about the differences between, like you said, the cinematic version of Rockstar Today in the improvisational kind of level design and mission design of Rockstar of the past. And that's kind of just what I want to add to what you were saying there about the makeshift sort of cover system, the makeshift sort of combat. A lot of what you do in these games, at least from what I've experienced so far again, is so makeshift, but that's where a lot of the fun comes from. And I don't think I ever appreciated that in the mission design when I was younger. I certainly appreciated it in what you could do inside the sandboxes, but that kind of thing of, like you were saying, you know, take up these six trucks and just have some wacky emergent stories along the way. Like that can be frustrating, but it can also be funny as hell. Like there were so many times last night, even in the opening stretch of a 2 or 3 hours or whatever, where just wacky stuff was going down. Like the NPCs were coming out of nowhere to wipe me out, or I had to like dodge out the way, throw a grenade and blow everything up, blowing myself up in the process. Mm-hmm. That just, you can see why those moments, those gaming moments have stuck with the likes of yourself and myself.
Yeah.
Other people for years upon years, because they're so unique, and when they happen it feels like no one else is going to get that exact replicated experience.
That to the core is why I prefer older Rockstar, because it's like right now me and you have had both, like we've had different experiences with these exact games, whereas with the both of us played Red Dead Redemption 2, GTA 5 99% the same way, because it's all like go here, stand here, use this weapon to kill this guy, and if you don't you fail. Whereas like the old ones, it's like this guy needs killing and you can spawn in a tank if you want, or like spawn in a bazooka or whatever, and obviously that's the cheat side of it, but also they encourage you to just figure it out, like do whatever you want. And I think that mentality, it created a sense of, it is like improvisational, it is experimentational. And I love that stuff. Like, I think that I wish that the overall package was tighter in terms of like the frame rate dips and some of the graphical bugs and stuff. Because there is a really fun old school sandbox feeling to old school GTA that for me, Rockstar have got completely away from. And that's been some of the most fun stuff, is just like, give me a few targets and I'll figure out how to take them out. Whether that's flying a plane into one guy that's left at the end of the map or something. I love that approach, and so I'll take all that. But we should talk about another thing that they're sort of like selling it on, which is like, you know, making it look really modern, like sort of up the new lighting engine and the new weather effects that they've got. The lighting stuff I think is the most impressive. Like sometimes it goes a bit too crazy, like especially if it's raining, where even power-ups will have massive lens flares across like windows of storefronts, and that stuff can look a bit crazy. They've actually got lens flare turned off by default, which I think is kind of crazy too. But in terms of the world detail, that stuff has been like genuinely impressive in terms of like, you know, you come upon it, you turn around a corner and you can see all the way through to like a mountainside on the other side, which was never there before. Mm-hmm. And how have you found the visuals of it? Like how did you, because everyone's mind re-reses and remasters stuff in their head over time anyway. How has this matched up to what you thought it was going to look like?
It's kind of weird because when I think, I don't even know if this is necessarily true in practice, but when I think about PlayStation 1 games in particular, they have a certain, even if they've got a cartoonish style, they have a certain scuzziness and a certain griminess to it, whether it's GTA or whether it's Crash Bandicoot 2. You know, Crash Bandicoot 2 was obviously incredibly colorful, incredibly cartoony, but it feels a bit grimy. It feels a bit like, I hesitate to say this, it feels a bit more metal or something. You know, it's like very angular. Is very, very.
I never would have thought Crash Bandicoot 2 would be a little bit more metal, but to be honest, there is a poster for Crash 2 where he's throwing the horns up. So,
dude, you heard it here first on the wind up. Crash 2 is metal as anything. But yeah, in my head, I always imagine them like that. And with this, obviously, it's doubled down on the kind of cartoony art style. It's kind of arse style, cartoony art style. We're recording this so.
It is a very cartoony art style as well. They've up-resed everything. Yes.
Yeah, totally. But it's kind of like flattened it out as well, like you said about, you know, the kind of like the flares, the bloom and all that stuff. The rain in GTA 3 is incredibly obnoxious and sometimes I can't see what the hell's going on.
Where do you come down on the rain debate? Because I've already seen that dividing people. I didn't hate it, but I have seen lots of gameplay now, especially in San Andreas, where when you're out in the middle of nowhere, wilderness sections, if it starts raining, you cannot see a thing.
I think it sucks. There is something about it where in my head, again, I don't know if this holds up in practice, but the way I envisioned GTA 3 in my head with the raid was moody, it was atmospheric. Mm. Here, it's an eyesore. Here, it kind of hurts to look at. And I prefer it at night when the rain goes away, which I shouldn't be doing, I don't think. There are kind of times where things look too kind of sharp, too crisp, too up-res that it kind of like jars it. So sometimes feel like there's not a holistic art style in there. Obviously there is, but that's just kind of a gripe. Other times it can look fantastic. It's just like so much about this experience, inconsistent. And you know, if you go back and listen to the podcast, we've done it on it before. That's kind of what I was worried about looking at the trailer, looking at the screenshots, that it felt like an inconsistent experience. And in practice it is, but that doesn't detract from the moments, like you said, where you do get a really beautiful, striking image and you think, this is why I'm playing it. I was excited for this in the first place.
There's something really interesting going on at the minute. Obviously, it's unfolding. The game's only been out for a couple of days. It's like that whole thing of artistically using fog, like to sort of like, if, for example, if you go too high in the world, you can see the entire map across all three games. And that was like one of the things that was introduced in Vice City, because you could get a helicopter and you could see like the way that the Vice City map is laid out, because there's so much like water around everywhere. It just looks better. Whereas like once you take to the skies in San Andreas, it looks like a Fortnite map. It's like, well, the desert's over there and the jungle's over there, and or the forest rather is over there. And I think that there is that conversation at the minute about like there should be artistic use of fog, just because you can remove fog based on LOD level of detailed like draw distance doesn't mean that you should. Like, we learned this with, or developers should have learned this with Silent Hill, and there was Arkham Asylum, and it's like these things can be atmospheric effects. Like, I've seen people comparing the San Andreas overhaul mod, I think it was from 2014, with what it looks like now, where even in the mod from years ago, you could take the jetpack up into the sky or fly a plane and stuff. And whoever modded that, they were called it the San Andreas fan team or something, dev team, mod team. They still added fog in a way to make it look like a city from the sky, like a certain level of smog or a certain way to show distance. And it's that thing where, like I said, they freed up all the draw distance, and that does make it look insane from the ground. I love that you can see the city from the grove. I love that you can see like the big tall towers, and you're just sort of doing your thing in the grove at the beginning of CJ and San Andreas, you know, hinting at the arc that he's about to go on. And like, I love that, but that's almost accidental, because it feels like in everywhere else they've just unlocked all the frame rates and whatever, and it's just gone crazy.
Yeah, it's a major pet peeve of mine. You know, like some of the ones you talked about there, the Silent Hill one in particular, you know, Arkham Asylum, stuff like that. It's just kind of, I just physically and mentally cannot understand why the developers would go in and just take it away and not even consider it. Maybe they did, you know, I wasn't there. Not even consider it as part of the actual art style, or not try to replicate it. Like, there are so many things that they replicate perfectly well. And then these elements, it's kind of like they just do view as raw technical limitations, and they chop it out. And then it's just like, there it is. This is good, isn't it? And you kind of think, well, no, because even if they were technical limitations, they're part of the DNA of the originals. You know, they're for better or worse, those limitations become intrinsic to its identity, and just getting rid of it, I think, is an overcorrection, and it kind of misunderstands a lot of the appeal of the original's art design.
There's a lot of it that feels like you can tell they didn't have the original art team like day to day. Like, there's an interview where they said they interviewed them, but you can just tell that original deft of hand, that original authorship, just isn't there. And I think that sort of lets it down in a few key places. Like, it feels like it was given to a team to up-res, and that's what they've done.
That's totally it. You know, I kind of opened my eyes watching the NoClip documentary on Demon's Souls, and how Bluepoint kind of approached that, and kind of just how much they ummed and ahed and scrutinized every single change they made, because, you know, they didn't want to add too much of their own identity in there. They wanted to keep the, you know, atmosphere of the original and the identity of the original intact, but they also knew that they had to up-res, and, you know, it seemed like a really difficult challenge, not one that I envy whatsoever. And undoubtedly, it was a difficult challenge going into something like the GTA trilogy. But I agree with what you said. You know, I'm sure the people at Grove Street Games, right?
Grove Street Games, it used to be called War Drum Studios.
Yes. I mean, I'm not saying that they didn't care about what they were working on. I'm not saying that they didn't try at all. But that level of scrutiny just seems to be missing.
Yeah, I think over time it'll shake out that they just weren't given the time to do it properly. Although at the same time, you can lean on the fact that they have done this before. They remastered San Andreas for the 10th anniversary stuff, and again in 2015, and those versions were not very good. There was if you look at the graphical glitches from back then, they're very similar to what we're getting now.
I think a lot of studios as well kind of make the assumption that anyone can do a remaster, anyone can do a remake, but it requires a special set of skills to do it properly. I think Activision made this mistake with Tony Hawk's when we got the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 arcade version.
That was the original HD one.
Yes, the HD one for 360, I think, 360 arcade. Like, that project felt like it was just handed off to a developer because Activision thought, well, it's a remaster, how hard can it be? Yeah. Obviously, that was incredibly controversial. Nobody liked that. Fans didn't like it at all. And then they seemingly learned from that. And then when it came to remastering it and remaking it again with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, they actually gave it to Vicarious Visions, who did the work and were, you know, experienced with remasters and remakes already. Like, I think it's kind of like when actors jump into comedy because they think it's easy and then they suck. Like, it's not just this easy thing that anyone can do. Remastering and remaking a game is incredibly difficult.
No, man, totally. I think that. We're like on like a, we're in a certain like point in time where there's a variety of different developers have tried this from different points of view, like the Crash stuff, the Spyro stuff, the Mass Effect stuff, the Mafia stuff. Like, it's just all these different ways to take old stuff. And I think if you've got a series of games, like on the gameplay side, you should be retroactively applying those later lessons learned in the older ones, and then touching up the graphics, touching up the feel of those games so they feel modern overall. But yeah, it's a massive like unfolding thing. I think it's fascinating. I think that the amount of like sheer nostalgia people have for these games is obviously what they thought they could cash in on. And I'll be very curious what to see what the like post-weekend sales are, like after the next few days. Because the general reception is very negative, like mixed to negative, with a lot of people just saying, I'm going to hold on, I'm going to wait. Especially on Switch, that thing is a blurry abomination. But it's we'll see how it goes. We'll keep playing stuff. I'm not back in. Although I'll be on the main podcast next Wednesday. So which by the time you hear this, it'll be in 2 days' time and I'll have been to London. I'll be there and back. But yes, for now, this has been the Wind Up. Enjoy your week. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Enjoy your week as well.
Enjoy it all the time. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.